The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
The French President Emmanuel Macron yesterday met with Donald Trump in the White House on the third anniversary of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And just as the pair were meeting in the White House to discuss the war in Ukraine, the US was actually siding with Russia at the UN General Assembly to oppose a European drafted resolution condemning Moscow's invasion and supporting Ukrainian territorial integrity. Now, in a moment, we'll speak to Patrick Bury, Senior Security Lecturer at the University of Bath, a former NATO analyst and army officer. But first, when meeting President Macron in the Oval Office yesterday, Trump was asked whether he would call Vladimir Putin a dictator, just as he did with Volodymyr Zelensky. And this was Trump's response.
I don't use those words lightly. I think that we're going to see how it all works out. Let's see what happens. I think we have a chance of a really good settlement between various countries. And, you know, you're talking about Europe and you're talking about Ukraine is part of that whole situation. The other side has a lot of support also.
So a lot of support for Russia. That's according to President Trump. At a later press conference, President Macron was asked what advice he would give to Trump as one of the last leaders to speak to Putin before the invasion of Ukraine.
My experience is the following, and I shared it with President Trump and the team. In 2014, our predecessors negotiated peace with President Putin. But because of the lack of guarantees, and especially security guarantees, President Putin violated this peace. And I had several discussions, especially beginning of 2022, several times, 7 hours with President Putin, 15 days before the launching of the attack. He denied everything, but we didn't have security guarantees. So this is why being strong and having deterrence capacities is the only way to be sure it will be respected. And I insisted on that, and this is why I believe that the US has the capacity to do so. And this is why I think we should never say, I will never send any boots on the ground, because you give a blank check to violate any type of commitment. So I think it's good to have discussion. I think it's useful to have negotiation. I think it's super important to go to the peace, but my strong point was to say, let's try to get something first which can be assessed, checked and verified, and let's be sure that we build sufficient guarantees on the short run, and this is where we are ready to be engaged. As for France, a lot of my European colleagues are ready to be engaged, but we do need this American backup, because this is part of the credibility of the security guarantees, and this is our collective deterrence capacity.
President Macron warning Trump that Putin cannot be trusted and emphasizing the importance of US cooperation in support for Ukraine. And he continued his message when he spoke to Brett Meyer on Fox News later in the evening, while also ensuring to praise the US president.
But my message was to say, be careful, because we need something substantial for Ukraine, but for the security of Europe and France. And second, let's work together on the future to preserve security guarantees, meaning to be sure that this peace will be respected by Russia. And I think the arrival of President Trump is a game changer. And I think he has the deterrence capacity of the US to re-engage with Russia. So I think it's feasible. My concern is that we have to go fast, but we need something first, a truce which could be assessed and checked, and full-fledged negotiation.
So a ceasefire?
Yes, but be careful, because in 2014 we had a ceasefire with Russia. And I can tell you by experience, because I was in charge with Germany to follow up the ceasefire in its respect. It was violated every time by Russia, and we didn't react, all of us. And I can tell you as well by experience, because there was one meeting between President Putin and President Zelensky in history. One. It was in Paris in December 2019. And because there was a lack of credibility of our collective deterrence, in February 2022, Putin decided to invade Ukraine.
President Macron talking about the importance of having collective deterrence to stop Russia and that Russia is not to be trusted. Well, now, Patrick Bury was listening to all of that, senior lecturer at the University of Bath in Security, former NATO analyst and army officer. Patrick, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
And now, I described at the very beginning of the show what Macron had conducted in the White House yesterday, which I regarded as a masterclass in diplomacy.
Yes, it was. I mean, the point of concern here, it's fine Macron saying these things. He's obviously had discussions with Trump, but Trump didn't really say anything, did he? That's the worry.
The concern is, what Macron did was he spoke publicly while remaining very cordial with Trump and saying, we are friends after all, not just politicians, we are friends. He was telling the greater American public, and did so again on Fox News, do not get into bed with Putin. He's not to be trusted. And it looks like Trump is very firmly in bed with Putin. And whether or not now with his base and with the Republican Party, he'll have to get out of bed.
Yeah, that's it. I think, look, my takeaway from what Macron said was essentially we've reached a turning point. And I think he means both in terms of the Trump administration and its support for Europe. But also in the movement towards negotiations. So what he, you know, if you're France or you're the UK, which are the nuclear powers in Europe, yeah, you need a couple of things. You need to make sure that the US overarching nuclear deterrent, yeah, extended nuclear deterrent over Europe as per NATO still stands. Yeah, I think he's probably got some guarantees about that. And then you need the backup for any reassurance force that looks like it down the line. We're not there yet, but down the line may be deployed into Western Ukraine. You need the American backup for that. It's particularly their air support, their intelligence and their logistics supplies based out of NATO, which could then enforce any kind and protect basically and provide an umbrella over those ground forces of Europe, which may end up going in there. And I think he's got some indications from Trump, judging by Macron's statements, he's got that too. So that there's a way ahead which he can see. And I think, as he mentioned, this would be a truce. And a truce is just basically like there's no paperwork, it's nothing, but we agree to stop fighting. And let's see how that goes down and let's monitor it. And if that happens, we can start talking about what negotiations would look like. So negotiations about negotiations, which would then lead to a ceasefire, which is a bit more which is a bit more solidified. And then finally, once a ceasefire is in, then proper negotiations.
Now,
so
Trump
that's
is,
what he's yeah. hopeful.
Trump
of.
Has been talking about the deal, though, and the outrageous demand that he made on President Zelensky that they should forfeit something like 500 billion euro worth of their wealth, as it were, in exchange for rather less than that, which was provided in weaponry and aid to Ukraine during the war so far. I mean, it was just bully boy tactics and President Zelensky was not buying it. But they are talking and some sort of a deal will be forged.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the art of the deal just says ask for everything and get something. So that's what he does, you know, and it kind of sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But often he gets a bit more than he probably would have if he was a bit more diplomatic about his negotiations. So I think apparently the word out of Ukraine and the US is there will be a deal signed end of this week, next week. You know, it'll probably be less than what he asked for, bearing in mind the US has only supplied, I mean only, but in relative to what Trump asked, 100 billion in aid or so. So
yeah. In fact,
yeah,
they supplied less than Europe supplied, and that
just under. Yeah, Europe has really started to step up, but the key component is the US military aid is higher, and it's able to access more resource of certain kinds of weapons much quicker because it has stockpiles. The UK, the Europeans cannot step up to that in entirety immediately. Now, they could do if they all start spending more on defence, but it will take about 3 years.
Now, there was a lot of questioning yesterday in the press conference, and it was a kind of bilingual press conference, but the very idea that if America gets guarantees for some of Ukraine's mineral wealth, the rare earth metals that it currently might depend on China to source, and these are vital for the new economy, that by getting access for American companies, that those American companies would then have to be protected. And that was an implicit, if not explicit, security guarantee.
Yeah, I mean, it's strategically, it's a good move for the US, because also vis-a-vis Russia, which, you know, was after some of those rare earths as well, let's face it. So, yeah, and also there's contracts for rebuilding Ukraine. which is going to have to happen. I mean, Trump is talking about Europe paying for that, but I don't think the Europeans would be happy about paying the Americans to rebuild Ukraine, but let's see. I also think the wider point, I don't know if you picked up, but like President Putin went on to air in an unexpected announcement last night, speaking directly to the Russian people, also praising Trump and saying that Russia is looking for a long-term, there is some movement in the negotiations and they are looking for a long-term solution to this. Now, exactly like you were saying and Macron was saying, you can't trust President Putin. You just can't, okay? You'd be a fool to. You must plan for your worst course of action here in terms of defense. But I think it's interesting. I think Trump, someone from the administration must, and the Russian and Putin in particular, have been very quiet. I think the Trump administration got onto him and said, listen, we're doing a lot of heavy work here trying to get this used to the table. You need to pipe up and start supporting the efforts. So I think that's what you've seen there.
Now, what this offers to Vladimir Putin is, I was going to say honourable way out, but there's nothing honourable about that man. But the idea, it would give him a face-saving way out of the war, because his economy, the war economy in great shape, the general economy in very bad shape, and there are those who would say that if the war had continued on with more support from America and from Europe, that they could have watched the Russian economy really suffer and force Putin into a negotiation that had an inherent weakness for Putin. This way, he can end the war with whatever deal is done and save face with his people, claiming his special military operation was a massive success.
Yes, and I'm not an economist, and people have called the end of the Russian economy before. The fact of the matter is sanctions work. They're difficult on fairly large economies, and also the longer they go on, the less effective they are because the governments work out, you know, workarounds, essentially. The projection I'd read and, you know, sort of in the balance was that, yeah, it was going to be until the latter half of 2026 where you might have started to see real pressure on the Russian economy. That's a long time to be fighting. You know, it's another 50% of the war that's, you know, from where we are 3 years. So I would be cautious about their Russian economy collapsing, frankly, in the short term. As per selling it as a win, yes. I mean, he's always going to sell it as a win. You know, he completely dominates the information space. Russian people are browbeaten and don't really know what's going on. So, he can sell a loss as a win, frankly. But I mean, the bigger picture here is what does it mean for Europe, like beyond even Ukraine, which I think will end up, you know, as a fudge. And that's because Ukraine is a borderland. It has been for centuries. And when values, and these are mainly Western values of democracy and self-determination, meet the Russian sphere of influence, which is a completely different value system about power and autocracy, there will be a kind of fudge. And that happens at borderlands. I mean, the bigger question for Europe is, if you can't trust Putin, and the intelligence assessments of like US and many nations in Europe is that he will go again, or he will be able to go again in a couple of years with his military in a small kind of bite and hold against potentially someone like Estonia, a NATO member. So there's that risk. And they reckon in 5 years he would be able to go again in a major war. And as you mentioned about his economy, it's on a war footing. It's doing well. It's quite difficult, you know, if you look back in sort of European history in the 30s in Germany, to take your economy off a war footing, reorientate it, and keep things stable. So there may just be, I would say, the most likely course of action actually is that he keeps it going and he uses his military rebuild to generate the economy. And then you'll get to a point where he's got this military and guess what you have to do? You have to use it to keep the economy going.
Now, so what about the territorial aspect of this, where Trump seems to be, and we know that Hex had conceded almost immediately before any of this, before the Munich conference, conceded too much. I mean, it was a crazy situation, which has been described as a rookie mistake by Hegseth, but it may be his master's voice that was there. How do you control access to the rare earths if that land is occupied by Russia?
So the rare earths, some of them are in the Donbass, but not all of them. Yeah, if you look at the map of where the rare earths are. So
they're predominantly, yeah, though, in areas, you know, the resource is not exploited yet, but the if you like, the hordes of rare earths are to be found in areas occupied by Russia at the moment. So how's that going to be split
on what
up?
You need. Yeah, it depends on what you need. If you look at the map, like, yes, some of the more valuable ones are there, but not all of them. Yeah, I think ultimately, like Hegseth, what unfortunately, what a lot of people who look at this at the strategic level already thought is that Ukraine is not going to get into NATO immediately, and they're going to have to give up some territory. So,
but why,
you know,
you don't see that before a negotiation? It might be the realpolitik of the whole thing.
Yeah,
but it's a card that you play. Okay, we won't join NATO. You do that at some critical point in the negotiations. You don't do it before any negotiation starts.
Absolutely. That is the diplomatic view and the people who are well-versed in negotiations view and the European view. However, Trump is about the art of the deal. And if he needed to open up conduits into Russia, he is the kind of person that would just offer that up, you know, as a precursor to getting them to the table. So that's his view. He's like, why should I mess around with this diplomatic kind of thing when we all know this anyway? So I may as well offer it to get them to the table. That's just thinking. I'm not saying I support it. I think it's important to understand, if not excuse, you know what I mean?
Now, what happens to NATO in all of this? I mean, talk of a European army, and Ursula von der Leyen was saying that the European army would take the form of individual, very strong armies from all 27 countries, which would and could combine as a cohesive force if necessary. Meantime, we still have NATO, and what's its future?
So I think this is like what Macron and what I mentioned to about the US extended nuclear deterrent and their support for a reassurance force from the US. That's what they're trying to get to the base of. Are you still in favor of NATO? Do you respect Article 5? The very fact that they have to ask that question likely suggests that there's a damaged trust, at least. And Article 5 only really works if there's complete trust and that's clearly communicated. I think Starmer's visit, he'll ask a similar kind of question, get a sense of it, and then I think Starmer and Macron will make decisions. You've also had like the new German leader say, well, we have to go independent now in terms of we need a European version of NATO where we all attack against, one is attack against us all, but we're not reliant on the US for this. So I think the general trajectory is probably increased defence spending in Europe, growing the defence industrial base. We know that the EU's got a defence investment plan now to start on, I think, 2026 of 500 billion. So it's a bit of a game changer that way. We have in Europe free, basically, you know, free ride it on the back of US. And they got rich off of too, the US. Let's face it, we used to buy all their stuff. We don't so much anymore. You know, free ride on the back of US larger defense budget. And also, you know, very cheap energy from Russia. I think both those days are over. And I think it means that the defense in Europe is going to move up the priority. I'm not saying that's a great thing. I mean, like, we'd all rather spend it on schools and hospitals, etc. But I think it's the reality, because ultimately, if you don't spend on defense, you're not going to have schools and hospitals, really, in the worst case scenario, unfortunately.
All right. And if NATO is dismantled in some way, well, it might be a blessing to lose Turkey, because they tend to be pro-Putin rather than pro-the West. And I don't know what would happen to Canada in that regard. Anyway, all of that will come out in the wash in due time. Patrick, thank you very much for joining us. Senior Security Lecturer at the University of Bath, former NATO analyst and Army officer.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.